This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie, and by my good friend, Kyle. Kyle, we are recording this episode on Wednesday, August 18th, which is the day that What If Episode 2 premieres. So we're going to get to talk about that extra fresh, which is always fun. It is the day that was supposed to be the day after we saw Shang-Chi, but now it gets to be the day that we see Shang-Chi. So, you know, life just throws little curveballs, little surprises at you, and that's definitely what happened when it came to this Shang-Chi screening.
Right. Two things there. Due to scheduling conflicts, we had to record this episode a little bit earlier than normal. We like to record on Saturday or Sunday just so that if there's any relevant Marvel news, we can catch that before Monday's episode releases. So I say that to say, I hope you all enjoyed the new Spider-Man trailer, because I'm sure it's going to be out now that we're recording on a Wednesday. So fast forward to the future and you will have seen the Spider-Man trailer, most likely.
You're welcome.
And yes, we also had planned to be like, oh my gosh, we saw Shang-Chi. It was so fun. Check it out. Can't wait. We haven't seen it yet, but I will see it in about 7 or 8 hours from right now. So let's just talk about how I'm really excited to see you again. I'm going to Austin. We're watching the movie and I've heard nothing but good things. So I'm super, super pumped to see Shang-Chi. Probably more pumped than I was before.
Yeah, I think everything that I read about it makes me more and more excited, which is nice. It really does feel like it's kind of a, I'm hearing that it's a different thing, which we always like. And I'm hearing a lot of cool feedback in terms of the way that martial arts is integrated into the kind of classic MCU choreography and sort of the mixing of genres there. So I think I am really genuinely excited. And I love right now that I've got this reason to bring you down to Austin now every few months.
Yeah. My wallet doesn't love it though. However,
yeah, I am excited.
Maybe we can get some Torchy's tacos. Torchy's, let's go.
Oh, man.
Torchy's tacos.
Look, they're, if nothing else, Austin has tacos and spades for you. So,
and it should be noted that your boys did get an invite to the premiere of this movie. So don't think that when you see all these people going to the red carpet that we didn't get invited. Someday, Rob, we're going to be out there in LA just cruising that red carpet and it's going to be a moment. So
it is.
Just know we're working on that, okay?
Well, it's funny. It's funny because there was a tweet from Jason Concepcion, who hosts Take Line, used to host Bench Mode. And it's funny because he was saying he went to the screener that we were invited to and, like us, or at least like me,
right,
thought that it was just an LA screener, you know, like the Austin screener. and showed up in like flip flops and shorts to the red carpet premiere for Shang-Chi, which I was laughing because I think we would have absolutely done the same thing, which would have been hilarious.
I don't think I would have thought to wear like a suit.
But
someday, someday,
yeah. Whenever we can make the, it's hard to podcast when you've got other things going on. That's why we've just got to make this our full time gig in a hurry.
We're working on it. Okay.
But Shang-Chi aside, we'll come back to that. Watch our social media feeds, as we'll be sort of putting our reactions up there, and probably by now there are some up there now you can go check out
at today. At the FFW podcast.
Today, though, we are very much in T'Challa world. And I say that not just because of the episode we're about to talk about, but also yesterday for us, so Tuesday, August the 17th, the Avengers game released their Black Panther War for Wakanda expansion. Which I know a lot of folks are thinking is kind of the make it or break it moment for this game. And hope, you know, I know the developers are really hoping this is going to inject some life into this. They've been trying to do different things to get folks back playing, using this kind of free expansion model, but in-game purchases and all of that stuff. I got to play it for a second last night.
Okay.
And it is very fun. It's very cool. You can tell, as we've talked about online, Evan Narciss, who we had on the show, he's a friend from work. He wrote this game, like he did the Miles Morales game, and you can definitely tell, I think, that the narrative is kind of a cut above, the dialogue is a cut above. And also, I think, as fun as T'Challa is to play, and he is the character is very fun to play with, I think... what's really fun for me is the new environment. Like, I think if anyone's played that game, it gets kind of stale pretty quickly.
Yes.
And I think this is the first time, you know, with all the different updates they've released, that there's a fully new environment where everything's actually structured differently. The little, like, loot boxes look different. The enemies are different. And so it's just kind of it feels very much like a next chapter in this game that I know has really struggled to push things forward in a meaningful way. So I'm curious to see how that impacts the game moving forward. They've still got the Spider-Man thing coming as well. But most importantly, I just wanted to flag that because I do think it's a great little snapshot of the Black Panther mythology. And I really, really love that Evan got to work on this because, I mean, probably 6 or 7 years ago, Evan wrote a pretty well-known article about why there needed to be a Black Panther video game. And this is before the movie or anything. I mean, I think this was maybe when Civil War was coming out. And just talking about how there was sort of a lack of that sort of story happening in the gaming community, in terms of representation, but also in terms of sort of like the deeper layers of that, and the same thing that Black Panther was able to do to the superhero film genre. So I thought it was really, really cool that after all of that, he was able to kind of come back and make the game that he's been hoping to make for years now. So anyway, if you're an
Maybe
Avengers
it's
person...
enough to get your boy playing again. I haven't played that game since we, you know, it came out and we did a couple co-op missions. The co-op missions are the fun part, and the fighting itself is pretty fun. Like, being these characters and having their moves is dope. But yeah, like you said, the environments, the enemies just get so repetitive and so stale. So
yeah,
if there is a new world and if it looks different, if there's actually a storyline, not just, hey, go shoot more enemies.
Right.
I could get back into it. I could try.
I think it's worth taking it for a spin, for sure.
You know what that game's worst nightmare is?
What's that?
The fact that Spider-Man exists. Because that game is unbelievable.
I know.
Someone actually asked me about Spider-Man PS4 or Miles Morales the other day. Which one should they get? And it just got me back in that mode. Oh.
Man, I know. I'd be curious to talk to Evan about the different experiences working on those two titles.
You know, just that's so true. He did both of them.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
My last other tidbit before we get into What If, I really want to get into this episode because I very much enjoyed it. Annika and I rewatched Black Widow. This was my first Black Widow watch at my house with my Ranger Station candle.
Nice.
And I love it. I love that movie. I don't know. It aged very well. So I'd say like my first viewing was mind-blowing because you and I were together. It was the first time we were watching a movie in theaters. We were seeing it early, et cetera. My second viewing was really good, but probably a notch down. In fact, I swapped Loki and Black Widow, if you remember, in my rankings.
Right.
But I watched this again, and I'm like, man, it's just really, really fun. It's funny. It's funny, and it's very emotional. And the action is top-notch. So I still give that movie very high remarks. And again, it's just important to remember that when I say a movie is, I think it's 13th on my list, that sometimes sounds bad, but I'm saying it's still like the bottom of tier one. Just, I love these movies so much. The average Marvel movie is better than the average movie. Definitely better than the average superhero or action movie. So above average Marvel means you're very good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I'm glad you raised that because I saw some folks talking about that movie again. I mean, it's the conversation's sort of just been trickling out over the past couple weeks, I guess, since the movie came out, whenever people get around to watching it. And it's interesting because on the one hand, I can see why people keep saying, oh, you know, it's good. It's not fantastic, but it's good. But I just don't, I really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, on subsequent watches, it's held up for me. And I don't, you know, I was worried that we were prisoner of the moment there, and probably to some extent, but I really do, you know, I've shown it to a couple of people, which I think is always kind of the test for me, because not just to see their reaction, but to have to show it to someone, and you have to wonder, like, are there going to be points that you feel like you have to kind of explain away or apologize for, like you would when you're showing people certain movies? And I just never had that sense. I've been excited to show this one off, and I thought that it was very much everything I could have asked for the Scarlett Johansson Black Widow movie we've been wanting. So this is not the episode to talk more about that, but I'm totally on the same page with you.
Yeah, two more things really quickly. The family dynamic is so much better than we initially thought. It still holds up. All four of them did such a good job in that film. The second thing is, I understand that going forward now, I think the disappointment is that you won't get a ton more Taskmaster, but I don't understand the disappointment of feeling let down by Taskmaster in the film. Does that make sense? Like, you get a lot of cool Taskmaster stuff in the film. Mm-hmm. I think if you're let down, it's just because it's not the same as the comics, and it seems like she won't be a huge factor going forward, and then that's a bummer that that's all you get from Taskmaster. Well, but I don't think there's a lack of Taskmaster in the film, at least not by much.
Yeah, well, and I just don't know that's even true, that we will not get a lot of Taskmaster moving forward. Because, I mean, they make a point to leave that character alive, you know, and kind of going off to the next chapter. So, I mean, I think there's, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if she would be roped into the kind of Dark Avengers Thunderbolts thing that's being cooked up, but that seems like a possibility. I mean, Taskmaster is associated with the Thunderbolts. So, you know, I could see it coming off as like, you know, in
the same way.
It might
be different, though. It might be harder to have her have that epic dark theme and walk around like such a badass. Maybe a little bit just because she's been, you know, un-mind controlled. Anyways, yeah, I mean, that's a different discussion.
The combat will still be really fun to watch, though, because they'll still be able to keep the kind of, you know, the mirroring aspect. But
and if she keeps the suit, the suit's the coolest part. Are you kidding me? And the mask?
Right.
I think it's got such Kylo Ren vibes. When she pulls up on the helicopter and she's like got one hand holding the bar and just standing there, it looks so much like Kylo Ren. Okay, anyways, we need to get into What If, because my biggest takeaway with What If was, this is objectively a huge jump forward from the first episode to me.
It is. It is, but, yeah. But, I had the same thought.
But before we get into it, a quick word from Ranger Station Candles. Because like I said, I was burning mine during Black Widow, and man, did my house smell delicious. Ranger Station is a sponsor of this podcast, and Ranger Station hand pours all of their candles into really cool whiskey glasses so that you can use those whiskey glasses as such once the candle is gone. It's pretty dope. No more throwing away your empty candles. Instead, you'll have your new favorite rocks glass. Each candle comes with matches and a cocktail recipe that perfectly matches the candle's scent.
I have my old-fashioned candle right here yet again. So once again, this is enhancing my podcasting experience here. Mm. And look, you know, full disclosure, Candace and I have been on board with Ranger Station from the beginning. We've yep. been big customers, big supporters, because these candles are fantastic. The scents are great, but also everything they do is clean, safe, and sustainable, and highly fragranced. They use soy-based wax. They use clean and safe oils. Look, scent is the first thing noticed and the last thing remembered. And isn't life all about remembering our experiences? So go to rangerstation.com, use code FRIENDSFROMWORK to get 15% off your first order now.
Okay, what if episode 2 is entitled, What If T'Challa Became a Star-Lord? And here's where I want to start. As I said, for me, not just because of my past experiences with this story or these characters, but I think that this episode was objectively a step up. It should be noted that when we reached out to A.C. Bradley, who is the writer of these episodes, she even said, wait till you get to episode 2 and 3 when we talked to her. So this was really, really fun for me. But I want to start here. Kind of crazy, right, to hear Chadwick Boseman. I mean, what a different vibe just yeah. knowing he's gone and listening to how much he killed this performance and then how much they probably changed the ending of this with the dedicated to our friend, our inspiration, and our hero, Chadwick Boseman, and they changed the tone of the music. It's very somber. Right. What a yeah, crazy thing, huh?
Man, I'm glad you started there because
that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, every time I think about the loss of Chadwick, it hits me like all over again. And I'm not trying to be melodramatic. It's just you and I talked about this, a year ago, I guess, when the news first broke. And it is just, it still feels so fresh. And this episode just makes it hurt so much more because of how much kind of life he poured into this performance. Like we were talking about how some of the actors didn't necessarily make the easy transition over to voice acting. And that was just not the case with Chadwick. And I'm not just saying that. I really feel like he put in like a lot of unique energy. Like he made T'Challa a totally different kind of feeling character and took away some of the more like stoic, noble feel that we got in Black Panther and added a little bit of that Chris Pratt Star-Lord, like the edge and a little bit of the winsome personality. And so I think it is just a bummer because I saw an article going around where I guess Chadwick had talked about enjoying that aspect of it and wanting to bring some of that personality into T'Challa moving forward. And you just see how creative he was and how invested he was in making this character interesting and kind of continually new. And it's just like, it's such a loss even just within the MCU, you know, not even going into how much of a loss it is for us to not have this person around right. in general.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, it's sad yeah. because I was super, super excited to see where Black Panther as a character went. Like, I don't think there was any reason we couldn't have thought that Black Panther was going to be one of the biggest fixtures going forward. Right. I think that was Marvel's plan. I mean, look at it. You're probably looking at it objectively thinking like Spider-Man, maybe Doctor Strange and Black Panther. Like we've said, there's no Avengers team. Like that was the character. So I'm super bummed on the MCU front. And then it just makes me super sad on just the personal front. Not that I knew him, but by all accounts, he seemed like he was an incredible person.
Right.
And so I've never heard a bad thing said about him. I've never heard a bad behind the scenes. He seemed really invested into this role. The fact that he was able to do the acting he was able to do while sick is crazy. Right. He made like 4 or 5 movies that were incredible while sick. So I'm sad on the MCU front, and it makes me sad on the personal front. But as a celebration of his life, this is pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he did an incredible job. I thought the episode was a step up, and it was just fun in general. Can we start really quickly there, just from the quality perspective, with the voice acting? Do you not agree that this voice acting was just a level higher?
Like in general or T'Challa?
In general, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I,
yeah.
I wrote 4 names down. I thought T'Challa, Nebula, Thanos, mm-hmm. Yondu, uh-huh. 5 names, and Korath were all so good and just, yeah, obviously a step up to me.
Yeah, I agreed. I think I wrote down, it's funny, I wrote down several of those in just the way, like what we were saying with Chadwick, that they were able to kind of put fun spins on the original characters. Like in some ways, we were talking about how in the Captain Carter episode, you know, they were having to toe that line between how the characters were different based on those choices. But, you know, ultimately it was it was still the same Steve, right? Like in terms of the way that Josh Keaton was trying to portray it, and the same thing with the Red Skull and the same thing with Bucky, like all of the characters were trying to kind of replicate the versions of themselves.
Right. That's a good point. He didn't have the serum, but everything else was Chris Evans-esque.
Right. And here I think they really had the freedom to totally change things up. And I think, you know, Josh Brolin and Karen Gillan are maybe the best examples of that, because...
Well, and pause right there. I mean, Josh Brolin, Thanos. Right. I got the chance to see this episode before you did, actually.
Uh-huh.
And actually the same with next week too, as a little teaser. And I texted you and I said, dude, there are 2 really, really fun, not even cameos. There's 2 fun roles that were not listed in the credits. Like when they're doing the voices at the beginning,
right,
it doesn't say Josh Brolin, but it's actually Josh Brolin. I mean, right. How fun and funny is it to A, see Thanos again, B, hear it voiced by Josh Brolin, and C, have him be the source of kind of the humor?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I could see how some people might react poorly to Thanos being the kind of comedic relief here.
Well, why?
Well, you and I talked about this. This isn't news. Because I was
saying, what if it's a different scenario? That's what I mean. If you do the same scenarios, that's not fun.
Well, no,
already have the movie.
I'm not arguing on behalf of those people, although I could if we want to do like a mock exercise. But I'm just saying,
no.
I think there are people who, the same people that I think take issue with Thor Ragnarok, I'm saying, might take issue with sort of defanging Thanos and making him into like a funny.
That's the whole point of this series.
I'm not arguing that point myself. I'm just saying I would not be surprised if some folks feel that way, just because there are people out there who think Thanos is the gold standard for a villain, and that
he is. In the movie, this is a different thing.
You're right.
I understand what you're saying, that people feel that way, but I just can't get on board with that.
No, I'm not on board with that.
You already have the greatest version of Thanos ever in 2 other movies.
I did think it was, I thought it was very fun, especially the way they did it. You know, I think from the very start, making even that first scene with him revealing himself as Star-Lord and the difference in the reaction, yes, to where it's just like, yeah. I love that everyone, it does wind up being such a fun tribute to Chadwick, because the entire episode is just basically about how much of a badass he is and how much, right, like everyone loves him. Not even, by the way, I don't even know that badass is the right word, because he's just generally,
he's like Robin Hood.
Yeah, I mean, he's well loved by everyone. He's like respected by everyone. He inspires loyalty. It's like this combination.
Yeah, he's not too cool.
Yeah. It's like there's no like posturing like there is with Peter Quill. And so again, sort of the same kind of things we saw with Peggy having a bit of an edge over Steve, I think because of maybe her natural her training and then maybe her own disposition. I think we get that like way magnified here. And I think the Thanos thing was such a fun way to show that like he was able to basically stop Infinity War from ever even happening with just a conversation.
I think that was my favorite what if scenario in this episode. The episode's called What If T'Challa Had Become Star-Lord. But that's not my favorite part. My favorite part is that even though T'Challa became Star-Lord, the twist is more that he didn't let that corrupt him into becoming rogue. He still used his good nature, his good morals, and his like royal posture, you know, to turn the Ravagers good and Thanos good. And now they all become like Robin Hood. And that was a fun viewing of that. Like, I love when they're walking away and he's like, oh, we could use that stuff to feed millions and cure, you know, galaxy hunger. And then Yondu's like, that's my boy. That's what I was just thinking. That's so different from the movie. That's the fun what if part for me.
It's just, I think it's so, it's such a sweet tribute because it seems to, like so many parts of this, whether intentionally or not, seem to kind of reflect what we know about Chadwick as a person. Not to keep coming back to this, but just several lines that stuck out to me or like in that conversation, he says, you know, no treasure is ever worth more than the good that can be done with it. And it's just such a, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really think this could have been a very challenging thing. I'm sure maybe it was for them to figure out how to hit the right note. But I really think that they did a great job of navigating a tough situation.
But it should be noted though, Robbie, that he had not died when they were writing this, obviously, because he voices it.
Oh, no,
so
sure.
I don't even know how much they were writing it originally as a tribute to him, but I think that actually makes it kind of cooler.
Right.
Because even when they didn't know any of this sickness or like that his death was coming, they still wanted to take this vibe with T'Challa.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just mean that in terms of post-production stuff, I'm sure that there were some conversations had about how, you know, what would be appropriate and all, you know, all of those kind of tough things that come up, like with Carrie Fisher and those types of situations. But
and they killed it on that front, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. I also thought it was really fun the way that they do the swap there, like in the way they explain that. You know, I saw AC Bradley saying that this came about basically because she realized that Peter Quill and T'Challa would have been about the same age based on the MCU timeline that we've gotten. And that was sort of the impetus for this. But then I also like that they explain it by the Ravagers looking for some kind of like extraterrestrial otherworldly presence, and that they like find the vibranium. And so in the fact that he's the same age as Peter Quill, like it's just kind of a fun, it's a fun way of explaining the change there for the what if scenario here.
Well, and it was also legitimately funny. See, right. They bring the wrong kid. He's got two ear holes. He's got two eye holes. He's got one eating hole. And then he's like, does this even look like him? And they're like, I don't know.
All humans look the same. And I love the taser face reprisal
there.
Yes,
taser face is in the episode. No, I thought it was really fun. Can we talk also about Nebula?
Yes.
I thought that was a fun reveal. And I thought she did excellent.
Yeah.
And the fact that Nebula is kind of T'Challa's love interest, Cha-Cha, is incredible. That's a fun imagination. That's what I meant when I was saying last week that, guys, this one is a lot more creative as far as if you're looking for a different story.
Yeah. I think this one is the most that I think of the first three that we've gotten.
Right, and Thanos and Nebula are the ones to ultimately kind of have the hero moments fighting off all the bad guys.
Right. Well, and one thing I had never really noticed because of the context, like, you know, the way that she normally plays Nebula it's supposed to play, especially how she started it, supposed to play into the kind of like there's no emotion really behind the tone she's using. It's because she's sort of leaning into the roboticness of it all. But she's what's crazy is that voice in a different context, like here when they're like in the casino and she's got the blonde hair, like it comes off way more as this like sultry Marilyn Monroe thing that I never would have guessed, but it works like in a totally different way. And I think that's like the ideal situation with this show. Like when you can take something and keep the DNA of it, but totally change the context and it still work in, you know, from this new perspective. And I think that's why I highlight Karen Gillan and Josh Brolin as being, you know, the real shining moments in here, apart from Chadwick, who obviously does the same thing.
Oh, and I just, not to beat a dead horse here, but I just loved hearing Thanos' voice again. Josh Brolin, thank you. You're back.
No, because it's random.
So, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Two other Thanos-related things, and then I'll move on, I swear. One, that was legitimately so funny. Like at the very end when they're in Wakanda and it's like panning through all the characters and they're like, that sounds really like genocide. He's like, no, but it's random and it sure is efficient. And then she's like, oh, dad. And like how he's now a good dude, but he still can't get over this idea. That's like, I kind of had a good idea though. Right. Like I was kind of right. It's really funny. To say efficient is a really funny word to come up with. Secondly, though, on a different note, I just think it's so impressive again that they can get continuously actors like Josh Brolin to still come back for this kind of stuff. Right. I know money talks. I know that. Okay. But there has to be something besides just money. Like when they're coming to do something like this, I can't imagine Josh Brolin got paid that much to do 3 hours in the vocal booth, but they still convinced him to do it. And I say the same thing about Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
That they actually get Kurt Russell to come back for one line. But still, that kind of stuff's really impressive to me. I don't think we should miss that, because you contrast that to other universes like this, and they struggle to keep people. DC struggles to find a Batman that will stay around. Right. They can't convince people to come back to their same roles. And they just keep doing it time and time again here in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely worth pointing out. I was so happy that Kurt Russell showed back up. I haven't fact-checked this. That was not Chris Pratt, correct?
It wasn't. And this is becoming a funny thing for me, too. Are you kind of now watching it and going, like, why isn't that person? Ugh, right. What's wrong with you? Like, well, I'm almost starting to come up with, like, a divider. Like, why wouldn't Chris Pratt do it? Why wouldn't Chris Evans do it? That makes me bummed. But now, I know there's other factors, but for a second, I'm trying to put my judgmental self away. So when I don't hear the voice, I'm like, okay.
And
Chris Evans, you were too cool? Too cool for school?
See, I feel a little bit more forgiving of RDJ and Chris Evans because
they retired. Yeah.
They're you know, I could see them being like, look, we had our kind of grand finale. We don't want to just be dabbling around in this universe forever.
But Chris Pratt, you're still around.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and I think, and again, I'm like, if Chadwick showed up, like, but the other interesting piece of this is, you know, Drax was not voiced by Dave Bautista, and there were some weird things going around online about him saying he was never asked or never approached, and Marvel kind of came back and said, well, that's, you know, we definitely asked everyone to reprise their role, so I'm not sure what. I don't know what these conversations necessarily looked like and whose side of the story to believe on these things.
Hey, side note. I was kind of joking, lighthearted with the Chris Evans, Chris Pratt thing. The Dave Bautista thing, there is something there. There's always been something weird between Marvel and him. I don't know what it is. He's multiple times, you know what I mean? Yeah. He criticized his role in Infinity War. I think he was one of the most vocally upset when James Gunn originally got let go. So maybe that's part of it. Then he joined James Gunn on the DC side. Now he comes out and claims he never got asked. Marvel's claiming he got asked. That one's a bummer because I love Dave Bautista. And Yeah, something's going on there. The other stuff, I don't know. Like with Chris Pratt or Chris Evans, right, it could just be other factors. Like I don't, I've never heard anything. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can't figure out the Dave Bautista thing either. Just on like in general, because he's such a James Gunn fan, which I love. I mean, James Gunn inspires, and you've seen this in the Suicide Squad as well. Like an incredible amount of loyalty among his cast members, which I think says a lot.
Yeah,
but it is so interesting because he's been taking shots this year, kind of whenever he gets the chance, and has basically said that, you know, he's very much happy to move on from the MCU when it's done.
But he's still doing Guardians 3.
Right. And still seems sort of like offended that he wasn't in this. And I'm just trying to like, I think what's interesting about him being less than satisfied with what's happened with Drax's character, I guess, is that I don't see that as an Infinity War issue. I see that as a Guardians 2 issue, right?
Right. That's what's mixed up in this is Infinity War was kind of just a little bit continuing what they were setting up. But his friend, James Gunn, is the one that kind of started writing him that way. And Dave, if you want redemption, work through it with James Gunn for Guardians 3.
Right.
Then. Like, you still have a chance to change your character there.
No, for sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
That's strange to me.
Chris Hemsworth has shown that the studio is amenable to that. I mean, if you go to them and say that you want to go in a different direction. And, I mean, Ragnarok was a wildly big swing. So I have to imagine if Drax wanted to do something, just go darker, you know, I don't think that would be an issue.
Not where I thought today's episode was going to go. I have a note on this.
I was about to loop it back in because I did think that the guy that did the Drax impression, it wasn't incredible, but I thought it was pretty good. And I did think that the writing was fun. This is a truly terrible picture of you. But then also the fact that he's taking the picture to show to his wife and daughter, showing that, you know, T'Challa was able to stop the Kree invasion. And therefore, like everyone in the galaxy's life is so much better with T'Challa as Star-Lord than it was with Quill as Star-Lord, which I just think is kind of a funny recurring gag.
Right. And dude, but that's my thing. Like, again, just to reiterate, that's even more impressive to me that they were writing that story before Chadwick passed.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that was already, like, that must be the impact that Chadwick had on everybody, that their what-if scenario was going to be, what if T'Challa basically influences everybody for good, which is kind of cool. I think it makes it cooler almost.
Oh, for sure.
Like, if they had done it post his death, then you would see why they were doing it. It's like, hey, this is the message we want across. But this was their natural fit.
Yeah.
Which I love.
That's a great point.
And so, speaking of Dave Bautista, you know what else he doesn't have, Robbie?
What's that?
He doesn't have any hair on his body. You know why?
Wow.
Maybe it's because he uses Manscaped. Is that possible? That Dave Bautista uses Manscaped? Support for Friends from Work is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's grooming. Okay, people? Join over 2 million people worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer. You can get 20% off and free worldwide shipping if you use our code FRIENDSFROMWORK at manscaped.com. Imagine shaving with a sleek, well-designed, and optimized trimmer that makes shaving time the best time. Okay, people? I have tried the Lawnmower 4.0, and I love it. I was blown away by the performance. And if you travel a lot, there's a new multifunction on-off switch on it that you can engage as a travel lock, which is pretty great because I do travel a lot. So it also has wireless charging and it's just really smooth. It works pretty well. Let's be honest, man. If you're still shaving your body and face with the same trimmer, you're probably doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's gross. Don't do that. Look, go boost your confidence with this new trimmer. It's fantastic. And you can get 20% off today. All you have to do is go to manscaped.com, use promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, and you will get a top-of-the-line body hair trimmer for 20% off. What do you got to lose? Go give it a go.
Manscaped.com. I love that I just transitioned us into a Manscaped promo read from Drax. That's pretty good, right? I want to say one more Manscaped thing. On our Slack, somebody posted a picture that Sam Jackson had posted. Did you see this on Instagram? And it was just like this mannequin with all kinds of facial hair, like a head of hair, a mustache, a beard. And I literally responded, what am I even looking at here? And then somebody said, it's clear, A, that he's back shooting a movie as Nick Fury. That's what he's posting. But also, B, he must use Manscaped. So Drew said that. One of our listeners, I was like, Drew, we're also sponsored by Manscaped. So thank you for the transition there.
Wow. Nice. Look at that. Who knew? I did want to say before we obvious, it's so funny. Drax is like the smallest part of this episode, but
I know, why are we talking about Drax so much?
I just wanted to say clearly we're huge Dave Bautista fans. I don't want that to come off as us throwing stones at him at all, because you never know what's going on in these conversations. You know, I do think it's important to support these actors, and by all accounts, Dave Bautista is the nicest, easiest dude to work with. So I don't think that the takeaway from this should be that he is some kind of diva or something at all.
100%. I'm glad you said that, because if we aren't careful, I don't want it to sound like we're just erring always on the side of the studios. I'm not saying that. Sorry. I was just trying to clarify that they obviously have some issue between the two of them, and I don't know enough details behind the scenes to know what's going on.
Exactly.
I was trying to emphasize that different characters have different reasons why they're not there, probably. And Dave's like one of the only ones I know that has a public feud. Not feud. Beef.
Right. You know? Right.
So who knows? Okay. Anyways, enough Drax talk. I love Drax. Let's move on, though. He's such a small part of this episode. I thought a really, really fun bit. You know, we talked about Easter eggs in the first episode. This has some Easter eggs. How about the Easter eggs of the weapons that T'Bond is using? So cool to just see him pull down the weapons. He's got a Dark Elves knife, which, by the way, shout out Thor 2. Let's go.
There it is.
And then Mjolnir is on there. Captain America's shield's on there. And then the coolest one to me is that he actually goes for Hela's helmet thing.
Right.
With all the knives. That's so fun. That's what I want this show to be, Rob.
Yes. And I mean, I think it's so fun because, again, the Collector is a character that you could argue was maybe underutilized in the MCU. It's never bothered me, but for folks that are maybe big fans of that character in the comics. And so I think, again, that's a great opportunity for a show like this to show what the Collector could be if he did have kind of that power vacuum to fill, like if he were to kind of rise to Thanos status. And I like that it's still, you know, Benicio del Toro still brings the same sort of quirky personality to it, which I appreciated, you know, but he's just buff. I think it was. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I thought he sounded different.
I can fact check that here, but I'm pretty sure that I saw his name there in the credits. I also liked, before I forget, I liked the whole kind of heist element of this episode. Like the thing that led them to the Collector. Like I just thought, you know, gave us a little bit of Ant-Man vibes, which is fun.
Okay, fact checked. Sorry, I was distracted. It is him. Wow. I thought he played it a little bit different. And enough that I didn't notice that. Wow, that's so fun. He's back too.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And yes, I did like the heist element. It does have an Ant-Man kind of feel to it, no doubt. I also want to point out, I don't remember anything of the music in the first episode.
Yes.
So take that for what it's worth. Just nothing really stood out to me. But here, what was kind of fun, did you catch working in the Guardians theme? Bum, 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 bum. And the Wakanda references were so fun to hear the drums, the whoo, whoo, whoo,
I wrote down the same thing, and I actually thought, maybe it makes sense, again, given the way that Captain Carter episode is structured. I know we got a little bit of the Sylvester Cap theme in that, but I think it was only whenever it was showing the recap of the actual First Avenger storyline. I think we got a little bit of that Cap theme there when it was showing Steve taking the shield. But here, yeah, I thought it was a really fun way to blend some of those themes. Honestly, I could probably have done with a little bit more of it even. Like there were some times where I was like, it would be cooler to me to go for like a full-on fusion. But it also reminds me of the conversation we had with Henry Jackman about, you know, what it looks like to come in when there's an established theme and how there's, you don't necessarily just want to recycle stuff. So I certainly see the draw to, okay, you're coming to this, it's your own thing. You should be able to bring your own compositions to it. So I can't fault that. But any time that there was a little bit of that Guardians Black Panther score mix, which are two of our favorites, I was very, very happy.
And I thought the outro song that she wrote, the original score there was beautiful, in honor of Chadwick. So
yeah,
I agree. Agreed. It's fun to hear those themes. I maybe wouldn't go as far as you to say, like, I don't need full blown themes. I think it's cool for her to still write her own stuff.
For sure.
So I just like the little shout out a little bit.
Yeah. You know,
it's
me,
like,
I like those callbacks.
By the way, the music in Black Widow is really cool too. I just watched it last night and I'm thinking about it.
Oh, they, man.
I thought right there, this is my train of thought. Okay, this is the crazy Kyle train of thought. I was thinking musical themes, little shout outs. And I thought in Black Widow, I love the music so much, but I love how, you know, you see the jet and he works in the Avengers theme. And that's the extent I need it. I don't need like a full blown Avengers theme. I just need a little bum, 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 bum. And then that's it, you know?
Yeah. No, Giacchino does something similar in Spider-Man Homecoming that I like a lot. By the way,
I like that is because, again, we've complained so much about the original MCU not having a ton of recognizable themes. And whenever they can pay off those themes in little ways like this, to where I hear bum, 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 right. And I'm like, oh, it's the Guardians. That's my favorite part. That's what I want. That's what I have with Darth Vader, right? That's what I want here. So anytime they do that, the whoop, 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 I'm like, yes, good. Well, Wakanda. Now I know. I know from a musical theme where we're going. That's my point.
The Guardians one is so fun too, because I realize, like, I don't think that Silvestri ever gives us a Guardians call out in his score. I mean, because I think whenever it first goes to Guardians in Infinity War, it's the Rubber Band Man song, which is still great. But it is, I don't think we ever get, like, it's such a great theme. And hearing it here this morning on a watch, I was just like, man, that I'm with you. I know you're always talking about how the Black Tears song is maybe one of your favorites. I had a realization on the Black Widow front the other day. It struck me. Do you remember I came on and said that I felt like the score didn't blow me away as much on my first home viewing as it did in the theater?
Yeah.
I realized I have this setting on our soundbar that is it basically, like, it maybe it, the word is compresses, but it's essentially like a quiet mode where the dialogue is louder. So if you're watching it like late at night, because we live in like an apartment complex right now for another 2 weeks.
So it didn't hit you.
So it didn't hit me because it was being squished down some. And so
it matters so much how loud you listen to these things. That's why I went on that rant in the theater. Because when you and I were in the theater and it's going, I was like, this is dope. I looked at you, I was like, this is so dope. And then when Taskmaster shows up and does the thing, it needs to hit you.
Yeah.
If it doesn't hit you, you don't feel it. It's like not having a kick drum pumping through the subs when you're mixing a live show. It's not the same energy. You don't think you need it until you don't have it. And then it's like, oh, shoot, that's not loud enough.
It's got to be like a wave.
End of rant. I'm an audio engineer. Okay, people? Give me a break.
The other things that I loved about the mechanics of the heist, aside from, I always love the kind of double, triple cross thing, which is fun, sort of like a Soderbergh, Ocean's 11 kind of a thing.
Yeah, it is.
But I also thought having Seth Green show up as Howard the Duck was really fun. I don't know.
That was Seth Green?
Yeah, it was Seth Green. Was that Seth Green in Guardians?
I have no idea. I feel like I should know these things if I'm doing a podcast with you, but
I had never known that was him originally, if it was, but I think it. Okay, I'm looking it up now, and I think it might have been. It was Seth Green in Guardians.
I love these. I love these live fact checks. I'm not editing this out.
That's
crazy.
We're
keeping the fact checks in here.
I had never known that, but that was fun. like you said, all of the Easter eggs in terms of the weapons were fun. For me, the last specific thing I wanted to hit, and then I'll let you hit anything else that stuck out to you. But I thought the Thanos versus the Black Order thing was not something like one. The Black Order appearance at all was kind of unexpected and a fun way again of showing that the Collector is standing in Thanos' shoes. But then having him battle them was really a cool scene there, and the way that it tied together with Nebula, and again, sort of the, you know, a different version that kind of makes this is one thing that I think this show can do that I didn't necessarily expect, is it can make the actual MCU timeline kind of the tragedies all the more potent. Because you see, even though it's kind of largely written for laughs here, like in these moments where you see that like what the father-daughter relationship with Thanos and Nebula could have been compared to the way that he treated her and what actually happened, finally culminating in that really hard moment at the end of Endgame. It kind of hit for me.
Here's my closing thought. A couple things. I said after episode one that if you didn't love the first episode of What If, I said just hang on to episode two and three because they are different. And so I stand by that. I think now if you've watched this episode and didn't love it, that's okay, but it may not be totally your scene because I think this is a pretty accurate portrayal of the vibe.
Yeah.
To the best of my knowledge. And I think episode three, you and I both even think maybe is even better, but this is kind of the vibe now. I think we're having a more clear picture of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
A second thing that I wanted to follow up on, you know, we talked about the science of the multiverse and how maybe even the laws of physics don't apply. That is true in science, okay? But I'm thinking more and more in the MCU, it seems like they're trying to do, like with this What If, that the same physics apply, and it's actually the exact same parallel universe until a decision is made. And then here's the ramifications of that decision. In this case, it seems like they're giving us the same vibe as far as everything was the same of the stories, you know, until T'Challa was the one that got picked up by the Ravagers. And so on that note, I was talking about how is Captain Carter overpowered and she can do things that Steve couldn't. And a couple of our listeners actually brought up an interesting point, which is that even if the physics are the same, and it's not that in her world she can just jump higher because of physics, following me, I think a good explanation is that she went into the serum-using machine already full health and strong. So it would make sense that her abilities are now even just more heightened, whereas Steve is coming from a much smaller state. So however you want to view it, you could say, A, the overpowered thing is just because it's animated. Or you could say, B, it's because in a multiverse, the laws of physics don't have to obey. Or you could say, C, well, actually all that is the same. It's just that she went in stronger than Steve. However you want to explain it, it's different. So I just kind of wanted to follow up with that and say, I didn't notice anything in this episode that really seemed off physics-wise from what we've seen in the MCU.
I mean,
it seems like they're trying to basically say these stories are the exact same until a decision was made, and here's their ramifications.
Right. I mean, I think that it would be kind of a missed opportunity to not go big with some of these scenes. Like, I think the Captain Carter flying through the planes thing is just a fun visual. And I think that's kind of,
I mean, agree.
You know, it's a cartoon series and you can just have fun with stuff like that that you can't with live action movies. So you should take advantage of that. One thing that I thought was funny here on that front is that first scene when T'Challa kind of reveals himself as Star-Lord in that fight. I was initially wondering, because of how quickly he's moving, if he had the Black Panther powers, like if he had, you know, done the heart-shaped herb thing. But I think we're supposed to think that he hasn't and that he's just a really good fighter. and, you know, having trained for years, right? Because whenever he gets captured,
that would make sense timeline wise, right? They wouldn't give it to a child,
right? Yeah. And he's like, and I don't think that there's anything just genetically necessarily about him being king that would make him more like it would make him physically superior. And whenever he's caught by the collector, he says he's just an ordinary human being. So I just wondered if – because the only reason I wondered is because they make a point of showing just how much he kind of like runs circles around that guy whenever they're fighting at the beginning. And so to me, I was like, well, if he doesn't have the heart-shaped herb powers here, then there is a little bit of that, you know, of them just being like, this is how – crazy good of a fighter he is that he can just stand there and take a shot point blank and just dodge out of the way at the last second. But again, it's still really fun, so I don't think it's something that has to be like dug into super deeply.
Okay, and here's how I want to end the episode. It's our weekly check-in on the multiverse thing. And I go back and forth on this, but here's where I'm at today. I'm just going to say this really quickly. I am 90% certain that the more I see of What If, the more it tells me that they will close the multiverse at some point. Because all these things we're saying are so fun to see, it's so much becoming a obvious thing to me that they are just exploring for a period to do all of these fun stories. But I don't think they can keep the integrity of the MCU as high as it is if they don't eventually close it. And I'm just thinking, here's how it's going to go. Ready? Calling my shot on August, whatever it is. Mid-August to 2021. Calling my shot.
Okay.
Loki opened the multiverse. They are exploring what other scenarios look like in What If. They are going to explore that for a while, including in Spider-Man. Spider-Man is going to see the other Spider-Men. He's going to see Doc Ock. There might be a Sinister Six thing from other villains from other universes that all collide. I'm not sure how that movie will wrap up, but sometime in the next year or two maximum, they will use the multiverse as a way to get the characters they want going forward into the current MCU, but they will find a way to close that era down and go back to the one timeline as we know it. Maybe it's more like Spider-Verse where you can still interact with those other multiverses, but I don't think it will be a thing for very long. I'm just getting that vibe from watching What If, which seems opposite because I'm seeing the scenarios played out. But I think they're going to use it as a way to bring in Wolverine. They're going to bring in the Fantastic Four. They might bring in another X-Men or two using this, but it will ultimately be closed down. And when I say closed down, I do think some characters will end with that happening. Like, we may not see a Captain Carter again. We may see Wanda actually leave the reality we know, like I've said before, and go live with Vision in a different reality.
Right.
And that's the end of Wanda. But I think it's going to be a chapter that's opened and then ultimately closed, calling my shot mid-August.
I like that. I do. I think that I'm curious to see how much they even feel the need to use it to bring in, like, the Fantastic Four especially, because there aren't really any film versions of those characters that people have much attachment to. So I feel like that could still happen organically within the MCU. I am curious to see if that happens on the X-Men front and especially on the Netflix Marvel stuff.
Or Deadpool's another example, by the way.
Yeah, Deadpool's a great example. I think that that's definitely going to be the case with that, and that will maybe inform how the X-Men stuff is done in general. I think one thing someone noted, I think maybe on the Slack, was that they could use also the multiversal theory not to actually bring any new characters in, like not have this character from this universe come over, but you could kind of avoid those problems and in some ways get the best of all worlds by sort of letting the audience know that, okay, like for Daredevil, for instance, the Netflix series happened in an alternate universe, but sort of like What If, up to a certain point, it was basically the same, and then they can change whatever they want to change to be kind of MCU canon. So that way, we kind of know roughly who Matt Murdock is. We don't have to get his origin story again because that was already done well. We don't have to get a new Kingpin because that's already been done well. But they're not now married to all of the specific events of that show by having to make all of that canon. It's sort of like a little bit of a cheat, I think, that would for me be maybe the easiest way to do it without messing things up unnecessarily.
No doubt. Oh, what did you guys think? What did you think of What If Episode 2? What do you think of our crazy theory there that we just ended on? Let us know on Slack. You can find our Slack by going to the FFWpodcast.com. I added a new button, like I said last week. Let's go, Kyle. And hey, shout out Squarespace. Thanks for making it easy to add a new button.
There you go.
But you can join the Slack there. But you can also buy our t-shirts, which I'm running low on and would love to give all of them out. So buy them there. Help support the podcast. It means a lot to us. But as I always say, the best way you can support the podcast is tag us on social media, tell your friends, spread the word, and rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. I say that fast because I know you hear it a lot, but it really means a lot to us if you can help do that. We are at the FFW Podcast on all social media fronts, and we love to hear from you guys there. So hit us up, go to our website. Make sure you also check out Manscaped and Ranger Station Candles. Ranger Station Candles make an excellent gift, so check those out and help support some of our sponsors. And next week's episode is going to be massive. Here's why. The third episode of What If, we already know because we've seen it, is very, very fun, and there's a lot to talk about. And Robbie and I will have seen Shang-Chi, and therefore we are going to include a little Shang-Chi preview after our What If coverage. So it'll kind of be a two-parter next week. So we got a lot going on. This is getting really, really fun, and I can't wait to see the movie, Robbie. Let's go.
Let's go see it. Let's just go see Shang-Chi tonight. You know what? Let's just do it.
By the way, Warren on Slack said he created a new drinking game. And take a shot whenever I say, let's go. And he says, take a double shot if I say, let's freaking go. And I don't know if I should be honored or offended by that.
Well, I think,
guys,
I think if Warren goes forward with that plan, he will die of alcohol poisoning.
That's actually a very, very unhealthy practice, Warren. Okay, so get it together. I don't want to be as responsible for killing anybody. Not Thanos. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Shang-Chi. Episode 3 of What If, same time, same place, back here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.